we have an awesome power battle for you tonight. Drop it. Get a load of this. The world champion is here. Judah Friedlander, world champ of everything.
Well, at least of the world.
Okay. Yes. Yes. To be fair, you have not wrestled anyone in the Andromeda Galaxy, correct?
No, I'm banned from the Andromeda Galaxy.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. They wouldn't want to
illegal
mess
holding.
With you. That's right. Yeah. John Iderol is presenting today. Johnny Tai with the tie today. Okay.
Yes. I didn't do it to be fancy. I did it because I was eating a burrito standing up, and it didn't go well.
Mm. Oh, okay, all right, good to know. Right, little inside baseball. And Francesca Fiorentini, who has such a great name, and we have not talked about it enough.
That's a cool name.
Let's talk about it. I mean, let's talk about how we would have talked about it more had Scaramucci stuck around. You know what I mean?
Oh, Scaramucci versus Fiorentini.
Fiorentini, Scaramucci.
Yeah, it would have been great. It would have been great. It's the one day pay-per-view. One day, we'll make it happen. Francesca, of course, is on Newsbroke on AJ Plus. Judah, by the way, has got a new Netflix original stand-up comedy special coming out. And it is one of the most logical comedy stand-ups I've ever heard of. America is the greatest country in the United States.
I love that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're the number one country in America.
Well, you know.
Every year.
Is anyone else even close?
No.
California.
Wow. No.
No, but guys, it's probably guys, that's why he's the world champ.
Yeah.
Because you cannot argue with that logic. Well, you can't do it. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't suggest it. You'll lose.
We're the number one third world country on the planet right now.
So
number
true.
One.
By the way, that as a title, when that pops up on someone's feed, there's no better title to get libs to click on it and conservatives to click
You're
on it.
You're totally right.
Yeah,
that
that's
is actually
a great
both sides
genius.
Are going to be like, I like that.
Right.
See what happens.
Liberals are like, oh, that's.
See what happens 10 minutes in.
But it's ironic and a little bit sardonic. I'm going to check that out. Whereas conservatives would be like, oh, goddamn right it is. This guy finally gets it. Let's check. Oh, and he's got a hat, and part of it is red. Let's check this guy out.
Okay. Number one.
All right. We got a lot of important stories for you today. Don't lose track of that. But before we get started with the news of the day, I shall do a little bit of what folks call a tease. We will soon have exciting news on the Young Turks about a specific Senate race, perhaps one in California, perhaps one involving Dianne Feinstein. Not yet, hold. I know on last Friday's show I said it might be this week. I have to confess, it is not this week. I do not have timing for you as to when it will be announced, but it will be announced, and it will be dramatic, and it will be too strong. So, yeah, a little exciting. Wish I had it ready for you right now. We don't, but we will very soon. Okay.
I'm excited.
I don't know what that.
I'm
strong.
Excited for.
All right.
Too strong, too strenuous. Like, is this like a Fast and Furious? Like,
oh my God! We have to have a line of shirts, something like that.
Too strong, like too strenuous.
Maybe not strenuous, but we'll work on it.
Okay, for the moment being, too strong is at shoptyt.com, by the way.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. All right, John. What's up first?
Okay, let's talk about the news. There is a scandal brewing, and it has to do with a $300 million contract for the redevelopment of the electrical grid of Puerto Rico right now that went to a company called Whitefish Energy, which you might not have heard of before this week because nobody had heard of it before this week because it is a company that was developed in the past 2 years and had just 2 permanent employees as of just about a month or two ago. And that scandal is looking even worse today because a copy of the contract that they signed with one of the commissions having to do with that redevelopment of Puerto Rico has been leaked, and some of the provisions of it are ridiculous. We're going to break down 2 on the show today. Here is a discussion with a spokesman for Whitefish Energy over the first provision.
Whitefish contract states, in no event shall government bodies have the right to audit or review the cost and profit elements. Why would that make sense, knowing how difficult these situations are, knowing that even Puerto Rico, if you go back to 1998, there's been misuse of funds, there's been corruption. Why enter into a contract that's not offering complete transparency at a desperate time?
Stephanie, is the contract was done in good faith with PREPA and the procurement people at PREPA. The contract speaks for itself as the ability to get the work done.
Yeah, I think it speaks for itself too, actually. Let's throw one more out there, and we're going to have a little bit more discussion with that spokesman in a bit. But another aspect of the contract says that PREPA, the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, which signed the contract, waives any claim against contractor related to delayed completion of the work. But why are you worried about that? I'm sure that they're going to hit all the deadlines.
Otherwise, why would that put it? Wait a minute. If you put that in the contract, maybe you're thinking you're going to miss some of the deadlines. So my favorite part is the "in no event." In no event shall you ever audit our costs. Yeah. Well, how about the event that you don't do any work? You take $300 million and you go back to Whitefish, Montana and have a giant party with Ryan Zinke. How about in that event?
But
nope,
Jake,
in no event.
Jake, believe us. We're going to worry about Jake.
On the other hand, that is persuasive.
Did you see that guy? That was just, I trusted his second chin. Like his face, I didn't trust, but that second chin was just, there's no corruption.
Screaming
there. Just screaming total credit. He is getting off his ass as soon as that interview is done.
And Trump has never had any accusations of hiring contractors and then not paying them.
It's never happened.
He's never done that.
That's a good point. Actually, now I kind of understand why they'd be worried.
Yeah.
But it's also ridiculous. With Trump. You see the way that, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan have been given, you know, hospitals that are not in use, or like they were built and then actually they're not people or patients to even utilize those hospitals. I mean, I feel like if we could just find a way to reverse invade Puerto Rico or restage this whole thing, rebuild it, then there would actually be some kind of, some real help there. What's ridiculous to me though is that I remember doing a story a week after the hurricane, thinking, man, this is the opportunity that so many energy companies have wanted to privatize PREPA, right? This failing national electrical grid that everyone knows needed to be fixed. And a lot of people were licking their chops at this deal. Yeah. And it goes to the least qualified and the most nepotistic, you know, possible company, which I think that took us all for one, because it was like, well, we know there's going to be something messed up with all this privatization. Someone's going to get rich off of Puerto Rico, but at least maybe people will actually, get the lights on a month later.
Yeah,
it's a great answer to the question of how in 2017 can we have a whole fresh new wave of colonialism.
Right.
Yeah. Well, just wait for a disaster to strike and then sell off the whole goddamn country.
And crap colonialism. That's what I'm saying. Like, just if only it could be a little better.
Well, so this is the shock doctrine, right? This is what Naomi Klein talks about. Well, we've got a crisis, so it's a perfect opportunity to take advantage. And the MO, the Trump guys, they're brazen. They're like, nothing matters. We could shoot a guy on Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't matter. So if you missed when the story originally broke, Whitefish is, one of their investors is a heavy Republican donor and donated to not just the party, but Trump specifically. But that's not that surprising. I think the more relevant part of it is that the CEO is really good friends with the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who I mentioned earlier. Not only that, I love how brazen over the top it is in that Whitefish is the name of the hometown of Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So they're not remotely trying to hide it. They're like, yeah, this is my bud. And he only had two guys in his company, and I gave him a $300 million contract. But just to rub it in your face a little bit more, to the point of this story today, we also said in the contract, you could never look inside our costs, and you could never audit us, and ha ha on top.
So on top of it, I mean, bear in mind, it was a no bid contract. This seems like the sort of thing that you could probably have a little bit of competition for. They love competition, don't they, supposedly? And I had missed this fact. Stephen Colbert mentioned this on a show yesterday, that Zinke's son had a summer job at a Whitefish construction site, which is weird, obviously. It does make me feel a little bit better that they have apparently actually had a construction site in the past. I didn't believe that would be the case. But anyway, with all of this and all of her concern about the likelihood that in this particular case and more broadly, it looks like the MO of the government right now is to just hand every single dollar off to these private corporations, we're very worried about that. Thankfully, there are some investigations into this particular one. two House committees and a federal watchdog have all opened investigations into the deal. San Juan's mayor has actually called for the deal to be voided. And FEMA put out a statement early today saying, based on initial review and information from PREPA, FEMA has significant concerns about how PREPA procured this contract and has not confirmed whether the contract prices are reasonable. FEMA officials said it is important for all applicants for FEMA public assistance to understand and abide by federal regulations for the funding. Otherwise, they risk not getting a reimbursement from the federal government. Now, I don't know if the stipulations of the contract will actually stop the sort of investigation that we want to happen now, and understand that FEMA is not exactly some sort of independent player in all this. It is, of course, headed by another one of the people picked by Donald Trump. But at least with all the public attention, it's possible something will be done here.
At least they got the word white in the I think that's why they picked this company. They're like, oh, white's in the title. This must be a good company. We should go with them. But it's kind of weird that, you know, they're from Montana, Whitefish. So it's the most inland kind of a place is going to fix a island. Yeah. So
with big water.
A place that has no water is going to fix a place surrounded by water.
Big water.
Maybe Trump did have something to do with it. I think it's mainly Zinke, but he's like, look, I know Puerto Rico is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water. Mm-hmm. And this company,
worst kind of water.
They know water because it's white fish. Fish are in water, fish, often big water.
Absolutely. And you know, water and electricity, got to keep them separate. Keep those things separate.
And white fish is Trump's favorite kind of fish.
It is. You know. But they are, I just read right before we went live that they are trying to distance themselves now from the deal. You know, and obviously when FEMA is like raising a flag, you know, we all should be raising a flag. But I don't, the small ray of hope around this, same with the drugs are, I think we're going to talk about later, right, is that like the administration doesn't seem completely immune to public pressure, that this outrage, like, okay, I get the small business thing, but really two full-time employees are going to fix the electricity of an island with 3.5 million people? No. So like for me, maybe there's a learning curve. Maybe the building blocks are being put in the right order of the alphabet box.
Yeah, I don't know, and to be fair to the Republicans, Republicans on the House Natural Resource Committee have also raised questions, and so they're saying like, this looks particularly fishy. Okay, so we'll see if that makes a difference. But the bottom line is that. There's a reason why they put stuff in the contract that you cannot look at what they're doing, because they didn't want you to be able to investigate what they're doing, given how fishy it is.
Typical low-level mob shit, basically.
Basically. Yeah. Except now, I mean, the sums they can hand out are so massive. I mean, $300 million. Like, why go into organized crime? Just become a politician, man. And you can hand off contracts that would make the best moves of gangsters look like nothing.
I figured out what Trump's going to do. Mm. At some point when this blows up, he's not going to blame his own interior secretary, even though the company is named after his hometown. No way. He's going to blame the Puerto Ricans.
Of course.
He's going to say, corruption in Puerto Rico. Mm. That tweet is incoming.
Yes.
Tick tock. I don't know if it's days or hours or weeks, but that's... He can't help himself.
It'll be their fault for rejecting this, for being ungrateful, because really they're just an ungrateful colony. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
What he has alluded to in the past.
That's kind of how he treated Texas, actually, initially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to play one other video from that interview that we showed earlier. And the reason is that, so you expressed a belief that possibly there would be a little bit of, like, the public pressure would have an actual impact. And I think one of the things helping us is that spokesman, if he stays on TV, I think that Whitefish is screwed because he's not very good at his job. Mm-hmm. With all of these concerns that people have, not just libs, but that conservatives have about cronyism and corruption in government, look at how this guy responds to the concerns expressed by the host.
Why would you need to have in there that there's no right to audit or review the cost and profit elements? Why shouldn't we be able to do that?
Stephanie, that's in many contracts.
Okay, well, I'm not a lawyer. I'm asking you, why wouldn't we be able to do that? Why wouldn't we? When I have a contractor come to my house, I sure as hell want the ability to walk through exactly what the profit margin should be.
Stephanie, those were all negotiated. The rates are all there. The contract was given out. There is nothing there. Again, everyone wants to see that there's a conspiracy theory.
No, sir, I'm not saying there is a conspiracy theory.
Yes, Stephanie, you are.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of conspiracy theories get bandied around, but the conspiracy theory of government employee gives contract to rich guy he knows, that's a pretty simple conspiracy. Yeah. They're not a lot of backroom dealings necessarily. They were just in an office somewhere.
But you're right about how bad a spokesperson is. But on the other hand, it's indefensible. Because look at the things he said in the two clips. One is, well, you know, that's in the contract. Yeah, I know, that's what we were saying. Yeah. He's like, well, that was negotiated and that was what was given. Okay, none of that answered why is that in the contract. And in fact, it was not, as we know, it was a no bid contract. So it wasn't even really negotiated.
Yeah.
None of it is true. And he's like, well, now the thing that you're saying is clearly written in the contract. Sounds like a conspiracy theory to me. Mm-hmm. If it is, you started it because you're the one who put it in the contract. Yeah. I mean, what a crazy thing to say it's a conspiracy theory that you can't audit it when it says in the contract you can't audit me.
But faith, Cenk, good faith. Remember good faith. It'll bring electricity. It'll bring light. I don't know about electricity, but a lot of light to a lot of people.
I mean, it's a horrendous contract, but I tell you, in showbiz, something I've learned over the years, even if you have a good contract, if you're not in a position of power, it means nothing. I've had contracts on me completely changed.
Really? You know,
or like I'll be on a show and it'll be say, oh, you're going to do this amount of episodes this season, get this much amount of money. And then they'll come after your season. They'll be like, hey, you know what? We want to rework the contract. So we're not going to pay that amount. You're not going to do that many things. And they're like, you can say no to it. But, you know, but you should sign it. Because they're basically saying, if you say no to it, we'll just write you off the show and then you're done. So they force you to do it. So if like Puerto Rico doesn't have any power right now, literally and figuratively, they have no power.
Yeah.
So they have to take it. So contracts really don't. They always protect whoever's in power. And this is about as worst contract as you can ever see.
By the way, it's like the definition of like the long game, but what a great scam they've set up where as these natural disasters, right now it's hurricanes, but it'll be forest fires and earthquakes and tornadoes and stuff like that. As they roll in and destroy communities, they get to sell these massive contracts to their rich buddies. And in the meantime, their energy policy and environmental policy assures that we're going to have more extreme weather in the future, so we'll have more of these sorts of incidents for them to use.
Right.
It's a great business model.
Yeah.
It's a
beautiful business model.
Yeah.
Bad for the planet, but good business model.
I once had a guy tell me, you know, contract's just a piece of paper. And I thought, note to self, never make a contract.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Should be always a tattoo.
You want to take our first break?
We'll
come back to Fox and Friends, getting a little bit of pushback from their audience, actually.
Yeah, so. Interesting. All right, we'll be right back.
Yeah, I think he's pretty.
All right, back on the Young Turks. Melissa Coviello writes in, I can't wait for the California news as I'll be able to vote and make a difference. I love that. Everybody go register to vote. Dan says, Judah Friedlander on TYT Live. How effing awesome is that? I would argue very effing awesome. Democracy says, hey kids, it's Francesca Fiorentini on TYT Live. Yay! I think obviously said with an Italian accent.
That's what it sounds like.
Yes. Fiorentini, noted sculptor.
Yeah, Fiorentini. Both of your names sound like they are out of a James Bond movie.
Friedlander and Fiorentini?
Yes.
Just my first and last name.
Are Judah we can take your head off with his hat.
Yeah. There's no way, like Friedlander is a very Bond name.
Oh,
unfortunately,
for sure.
Judah might be a villain name, right?
I'm okay with
he's
that.
He's the villain.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the sort of the ninja, I don't know, weaponized robot.
Something,
I get it.
Yeah. I mean, look, Francesca Fiorentini is. Yeah,
you're typecast in that way.
I'm typecast, I get it.
Cenk Uygur, a very Bond, no. Okay.
John Roller.
Oh, did you want us to return that? Cenk,
no.
You're the high roller at the blackjack table who's just
crushing. That would work well.
Yeah, I can do that. I can
that
do
would
that.
Work very well.
You do a lot of rolling at the blackjack table? I don't think you know that game.
He mostly just convinces everyone about the class war at the blackjack.
You know where you
save your money.
You know where you really want to remind people about income inequality is the blackjack table.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, John. What's next?
Okay, billionaire philanthropist and activist Tom Steyer is back with an ad that he has produced, calling for Donald Trump's impeachment, and he wanted to put it on a place where he knew that Trump would see it, and so of course he chose Fox and Friends. Let's see what it looks like.
He's brought us to the brink of nuclear war, obstructed justice at the FBI, and in direct violation of the Constitution, he's taken money from foreign governments and threatened to shut down news organizations that report the truth. If that isn't a case for impeaching and removing a dangerous president, then what has our government become? I'm Tom Steyer, and like you, I'm a citizen who knows it's up to us to do something. It's why I'm funding this effort to raise our voices together and demand that elected officials take a stand on impeachment. A Republican Congress once impeached a president for far less. Yet today, people in Congress and his own administration know that this president is a clear and present danger, who's mentally unstable and armed with nuclear weapons. And they do nothing. Join us and tell your member of Congress that they have a moral responsibility to stop doing what's political and start doing what's right. Our country depends on it.
So if you thought that the president might not have seen that because he was doing some important government type stuff, you haven't been paying attention this year. Yes, he watched it. He immediately tweeted about it. Wacky and totally unhinged Tom Steyer, who has been fighting me and my Make America Great Again agenda from beginning, never wins elections, which is a direct response to the charges later. It's not. So look, he's pushing for that. He's, I guess, able to. I'm surprised that Fox actually ran the ad in the first place. I have recently read just this week that their ad revenue is down 17%. So it's possible that they can be less choosy about the ads. But Fox and Friends is a popular show, I think, at least in the White House. It polls very well. And so they decided to run that. Now, Fox and Friends audience was not happy. They were deluged with a torrent of tweets and comments on the articles about it, saying that they had been taken over by commies and Jews, and that's why they were doing this, that they were just in it for the money. Mm-hmm. And this, man, audiences really expect consistency in a message, because if there's anybody who has earned, for better or worse, protection from the charge that they're not sufficiently pro-Trump, isn't it Fox and Friends at this point? Like, well, they've done nothing but help him and praise him for a year. But they run this one ad and people are leaving their show. They're not watching anymore.
Yeah, I don't believe them anyway.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Look, that's why they were probably particularly angry. They're like, this is a bubble. You are not supposed to allow opposing viewpoints into this bubble.
Yes.
It really disturbs us. But people who huff and puff and say they're going to leave, I mean, just check the comments below. Okay, they never leave. They're like, oh, like, next time.
You do this again. Right. But no, there's a lot of like, I'm going to change the channel. To what? To reality? Like, good luck with that, buddy.
I don't know. There's a lot of new right-wing channels. The hotel I'm staying at, there's
really?
So many new ones. Newsmax has a 24-hour
That's
channel.
True.
And what is it? Is it One America or something?
OAN?
Yeah, OAN. I was watching it yesterday.
That's true.
I was like, maybe they're the friends of Fox and Friends. You know, so I always wonder. I always watch Fox and Friends. I'm like, who are the friends exactly? I know
friends?
Who Fox
true,
is.
Because all those
who
people are employees.
Yeah,
everyone's being
I don't
paid
see
to
the
be
friends.
Here.
Yeah. I think that'd be cool if there was a crossover with the actual show Friends.
That's like what I always thought it was.
Someone can web that together and like let's have Fox and Friends, you know?
Ross!
Let's have Steve Doocy dating somebody on that show.
But they need the revenue. I mean, if they're going to keep on paying out like everyone who accuses their hosts of sexual assault and they have to silence them, $32 million for Bill O'Reilly, man, you need the money. I get it, Fox. But I actually thought that this was a pretty effective ad. I mean, he's calm. He is those blue eyes, those like steel blue eyes staring at you as the camera just slowly pans in. I thought it was effective. I just thought that the messaging could have been a little different. I think it could have just been like, Donald, seek therapy. Mm-hmm. Like, we know you need help. We want to help you. Step down, buddy. You can golf. Every day.
He can do that anyway.
So I want to get to Tom Steyer's message too, but first I like Trump's message. Steyer never wins elections. Good reason for that, never run for one. Okay, I assume that he means the money that he puts into elections.
Yeah. Right.
And of course that's not true either. He's won, he's lost based on who he's funded. Anyway, so I think that the Steyer ad is smart in a lot of different ways. They're going to rally everybody to their own side. It was smart to run it on Fox and Friends to get under Trump's skin, who is they know cannot help himself and will give you free publicity.
Which is a tactic John Oliver's used a couple of times. He's run ads on Fox and Friends. Yes.
And so really well played. I think it was super smart. They're going to get a lot of people on their side. And you know, and Steyer is very wealthy. He's a billionaire. He's a progressive. And he's not looking to take the money that he uses and create benefits for himself like tax cuts. Mm-hmm. He is not arguing for that, right? And so it's not out of self-interest, except for the fact that the main money that he spends is to try to fight against climate change. So I guess he's got a conflict of interest because he'd like to stay alive.
He's got an agenda.
All right, okay. Yep. And he wants his kids and grandkids to have a planet.
Can I play devil's advocate for just a second?
Yeah.
Like I agree with basically what they said there, and certainly he's free if he wants to pay for an ad. You can pay for an ad, I guess. It happens all the time. Corporations do it. But it does make me a little bit uncomfortable that we have this class of people, and some of them are progressives and pro-environment and all that, who are so wealthy that they can unilaterally just produce these political ads. And like, I don't know that anything he said there was inaccurate, so maybe this isn't a good example for me to criticize, and I'm glad that Fox ran it. But it is still just more advertising coming from the direct point of view of a billionaire. Like, I agree with this one, but that they can just, like, they could buy out all the ads if they want.
The country is billionaire versus billionaire versus billionaire.
We just have to hope that the right billionaire wins, and that's a shitty position to be in.
Because of that subtitle in that commercial, we know he's an American citizen, so. That was my favorite part, American citizen. I just love that.
So
like, just in case you're worried,
can relax.
All right. Well, look, this be balanced here, and I'll join the fray of slight criticisms here. One is American citizen looked really goofy. Totally agree. Like, come on, dude. You could have written Homo sapien, right? Like human being. We know. It's like a way of saying not billionaire, not running for office. Okay. But let's keep it real. One day, Tom Steyer might run for office. Okay, and he is a billionaire. I don't have any problem with billionaires doing the right thing. I love it. That's wonderful. He should give money to Wolfpack. He can't give money to Justice Democrats because they don't take big donations like that. But Wolfpack does. Go ahead.
Is this part of the too strong, too strenuous?
No, nothing to do with that. And look, and if he's going to run for office, and a lot of people sign that petition, that's probably a good move too. I get it. Look, overall, there's not that many people doing the right thing. He's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
I'll take it and run.
I agree.
And it's okay to put his message out. And if he wants to spend all whatever he has, 1. Whatever billion, on doing great things, including in the media, including buying ads, I think that's actually lovely.
Yeah.
I just want to prevent even good guy billionaires, like to John's point, of being able to buy elections.
Yeah.
And that's different. Here, he's not, right now, there is no election.
Yeah.
He's not trying
it's
to influence.
Issue advocacy.
It is actual issue advocacy, as opposed to, hey, vote for X and don't vote for Y, which I think is definitely different. And he should, my only last tiny criticism is speak up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a little too whispery.
No, I like that.
I'm glad he brought up.
It's more ominous.
Okay. I'm glad he brought up the the criticism of Trump's irresponsibility in dealing with North Korea. And the threat of nuclear war. It's like, because to me it seems like there's almost no anti-war movement going on.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about all different issues, but when it comes to war, it's like almost nothing going on. And just painting Kim Jong-un as, oh, he's the evil crazy one. It's like, we're the only country to ever use nukes on anybody. And, we did it twice. You know, and now they're already talking about tactical nukes, these little nukes.
More usable ones.
Yeah, they won't cause much damage. Just tactical nukes.
Trump's talking about that. It's terrifying,
And so I'm glad he threw that in there, because it seems like that's not even in the conversation these days.
Hopefully, if you scare people enough about the threat of nuclear war in this one particular instance, you can then build on that we shouldn't just get out of this situation, we should get out of the decades-long situation where multiple people have access to enough weaponry to destroy the entire world. Let's not have that situation. Even if Donald Trump's not there, even if it's Barack Obama or someone who seems sane even, maybe they shouldn't have the capacity to kill every human that exists.
Well, last thing is to just to double down on what Judah and John are saying. What I'm most concerned about when it comes to Trump is his mental stability in regards to North Korea particularly. And so, you know, impeachments, that's fine and it's a good strategy that they're pursuing. I think the 25th Amendment actually should be incredibly rare, but this might be a rare instance where we should consider using it. And we even have a petition on that or a poll on that, tytnetwork.com/25th, because he might not be stable enough to be president of the United States. And I think he's a literal danger to the world. And I'm not the only one saying that now. Now you have Republican senators like Bob Corker and Jeff Flake and John McCain and former presidents like Obama, but also George W. Bush coming out and making speeches about how, watch out, he's not stable. And,
and this is coming from George W. Bush.
Yeah, so I just think
he knows that world.
Yeah, I think.
Anyway, just for context, one final point in terms of whether the public might actually take to this message from Sarah right there. Public policy polling in this month actually found that 48% of the public support impeaching Trump, while 43% oppose. The group notes that this is the fifth month in a row we find voters in support of impeachment.
And I think that's significant. I think a lot of people are going to look, going to watch this, not a lot of people, but like, you know, the sons and wives of, you know, the man in the lazy boy chair yelling at the TV.
That's Trump.
Are going to maybe, yes. So the Melanias and the Barons of America are going to go maybe into the back room and get on the computer and sign up for it. I think that's important. I think it's important to be like, it's okay to dissent. It's okay that you're scared, you know?
I just want to say the Melanias and the Barons of America is the scariest thing I've ever heard. That's the scariest thing I've ever heard.
Is there another Melania or Baron?
But the millions of them.
Yeah. But we need them. Theory. We need them.
There are literally theories that there are multiple Melanias.
Exactly. It's like a horror movie.
Talk about a weaponized ninja.
There you go.
For her.
Okay, let's jump into one more topic before we take our second break. This week, Donald Trump announced a national emergency, not just in a rhetorical sense, but in a technical government sense over the issue of opioid abuse and the deaths that are caused by it. And we're talking about literally tens of thousands of Americans every single year, with that number rapidly climbing, killed every year thanks to how easy it is to access those drugs, how overprescribed they are, and all of that. And so that would lead you to perhaps believe that he's taking it seriously, which is good. This is a big issue facing America. But there was one thing missing from his declaration, and that was basically any money whatsoever to actually do anything about it at all. The official declaration does allow the executive branch to dip into the Public Health Emergency Fund, which sounds good until you find out that that fund currently has $57,000 in it, which is not a lot of money to deal with a problem that affects millions of Americans.
This is the part of the story that I love. They say the declaration will also allow the agency to shift around existing sources of funding to help combat the epidemic, but it won't add any new money. So go ahead, shift that $57,000 around. I mean, you could move it here, then you could move it over there.
Take some back.
Yeah. And if it was other money, like war on drugs type money that we were actually putting to a drug that is killing the tens of thousands of Americans, maybe that would be a good thing. That's not actually what it is. By the way, in case you're wondering, like, how does this affect me as a person dealing with the opioid epidemic? Well, with $57,000 and millions of Americans currently suffering in this epidemic, it works out to about 2 cents per person. So they're gonna have to be very efficient. There can't be any room for government waste in this effort at this point.
Advocates for fighting this scourge, by the way, including a lot of advocates who support Donald Trump, support him even during the campaign, because this actually affects everybody. And there's a lot of people in red states who have lost loved ones and now have become advocates for tackling this issue. Say that you need at least $45 billion to tackle this. To give you a sense of context between $57,000 and $45 billion.
Well, that's one of the reasons actually that I believe this week 14 Senate Democrats and an independent introduced a bill, is on Wednesday, to invest $45 billion to address the opioid crisis. Now there is one other, that would help by the way, as we now know. There is one other bit of money, like between $1 and $2 billion, that Trump is saying he has made available to fight the opioid crisis, which is good. It's not nearly enough money, but it's good. except he didn't allow it. It was passed back at the end of 2016 before he became president. So it's good that they did that little step, but he's taking credit for it to perhaps dodge responsibility for not doing any more money today or early this week.
Well, with $45 billion, you can buy a lot of OxyContin, which, yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
But you know, the opioid crisis is bad, and I think this country needs to go back to crack. Crack was a much more exciting epidemic. I notice also how nobody's talking about jailing all these opioids.
Interesting.
And I'm not sure. I'm just wondering what that could be.
Yeah, how come they're sort of the protagonists?
I wonder why that is. And, and in the 80s, when the crack was going on, seemed like a different demographic might have been doing crack, and they were really wanting to imprison a lot of people.
So $45 billion for crack.
I can't figure it out.
To buy more. I was just going to say the same thing, Judah. Yes. Like, I feel like it is really important to take serious this epidemic and see drug users and people who are addicts not as criminals but as victims. And when it happens to be middle income and poor white people, they are seen as victims. And when it happens to be black people, they are seen as criminals. And just how overtly racist can we be? And how, I mean, the right always talks about virtue signaling, that like the left does this virtue signaling, that or like these like dog whistling or whatever. And I feel like this is the biggest BS, empty promise, virtue signal to white people that I, white president, have your white back, when I'm not actually, I don't, I'm not gonna put any money into this program whatsoever. I'm just gonna, it's another talking point. Meanwhile, we're gonna criminalize Latinos and immigrants and undocumented people and people of color. We're gonna lock them up. There are more than 2 million people in our prison system. There are 2.6 million who this epidemic has affected. What about our prison system and all the people who are stuck in that? We have, you know, the most incarcerated population in you know, the Western industrialized world. Like, so, but no, that's not an issue because those are people of color. So I think that we need to be really on our toes when it comes to understanding that just how overtly racist this is, you know?
Yeah. So look, white privilege is a term that triggers the right wing more than probably any other term. And actually, I understand why it does for a lot of people, because you might be a young white guy in the middle of Nebraska and you're thinking, what goddamn privilege do you think I have? And I hear you, brother. I get it. You're working for $7.25. We're actually trying to help you, okay? Yeah. It doesn't mean that you're actually rich and powerful and stuff. You're not, okay? It just means that you might not suffer some of the stuff that African Americans suffer on top of the situation that you're in, right? Yeah. So when your family's dealing with an opioid issue, which is a lot of families are, people are sympathetic and go, oh my God, it's an epidemic, and to Judah's point, and we have to help you, and which is great, that's how they should. I don't want them to treat you any worse. But then when somebody had a similar fate, and it was on the issue of crack and the drug of crack, everybody was like, ah, dear, we gotta lock these guys up. But that was also a health issue. And even to this day, I bet you a lot of people watching right now going, nah, I mean, crack wasn't, no, that wasn't a health thing. The crack is crack, that's dangerous. Opioids, they killed 64,000 people last year, way more than crack. Yeah. In fact, this is a stunning number. It is now the leading cause of death in America for people under the age of 50. More than car accidents, heart attacks, cancer. That's unbelievable. It's the most dangerous thing there is.
It is really hard in America for something to kill you more than guns kill you.
Yeah.
Opioids really had to work hard.
White privilege, just to finish that thought, white privilege is not something you have. It's an extra burden you don't have. You see what I'm saying? They should almost figure out a better way of framing it. Like
it's a power structure.
Yeah.
It's a government power structure meant to, you know, help certain people and do the opposite of helping to some other people. But people also, I don't know what the stats are, but I don't know if it's the majority. I think it's certainly a lot of the people who get hooked on opioids are not getting hooked on it from drug dealers. Mm-hmm. It's from doctors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The profit motive.
Yeah. About three quarters in a different story we did earlier.
Three quarters.
Yes. And so there is a gateway drug. They warned us about it throughout the 1980s. They just had the wrong one. It turns out marijuana does not lead to heroin. Legal opioids lead to heroin. And by the way, they don't even have to lead to heroin. Half the deaths are just coming from people hooked on legal opioids.
Yeah. Right.
And half are coming from heroin. But those folks, most of them came through legal opioids. And then So the virtue signaling is, hey, white people, don't worry, I got your back. Opioid, oh God, oh, it's not like freaking crack. I go, oh my, it's a health thing, I'm gonna help you. But then the reality is, what do they actually do? Which is nothing. Why? Because follow the money, as always. So when you go to imprison black folks for doing the wrong kinds of drugs, people are gonna make money. Private prisons, police departments, etc., etc. There's like a long list of people who make money off of that. But when on the opioid issue, the money's on the other side. Right. The drug companies make a tremendous amount of money. So they do not want you doing anything about this. They do not want you regulating. So all of a sudden, now when it's opioids, no enforcement, no actual resources to actually fight the epidemic.
Yeah. Is it the final point I make, isn't it amazing how little we can get done as a country? That this is actually one of the issues that finally, during the last cycle of all the debates that we had, this came up multiple times, especially New Hampshire. They actually talked about it a bunch. They talked about opioid abuse more than they talked about climate change, more than they talked about reproductive rights, a number of other huge issues. Yeah. It finally got discussed. And we're a year and a half later, and here's $57,000. God, it's such a useless goddamn government we've got.
It doesn't point the finger at, you know, scary brown people enough. So like, don't put money into it, because it points the finger at you're saying at pharmaceutical companies. I'm sure you guys have talked about Tom Marino, the former nominee to be drug czar, who was then withdrawn, but he helped pass legislation to protect these same drug companies from any sort of accountability, responsibility for the opioid epidemic that they helped to cause.
Yeah.
So you know, that's who we're talking about. This is the swamp, and yeah.
Yeah. So my final point is, I love the recriminations back and forth. Christie was appointed by Trump to lead the Opioid Commission. And they say, hey, Christie, you could come out with this report and there's no money in it. He goes, oh, that's literally, this is a quote, that's Congress's job. Okay? So I'm not going to do anything about it. What do you want me to actually solve it? Yeah, that's what your job was. No, man, I'm not going to do that. That's Congress's job. So then they go to Congress. Okay, fair enough. Then they go to Cornyn, who is the number two leader in the Senate for the Republicans, John Cornyn from Texas. And he says about the Trump team, I would hope we would come up with a plan before we start talking about money. I don't know what the White House plan is. We need some more meat on the bone. In other words, don't ask me, man. I ain't got no money. Ask the White House. The White House is like, don't ask me, man. Go ask them. In other words, we're never going to give you the money. It was just PR. We were just messing with you. If you believe Trump that he was going to do something about the epidemic, well, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I love that.
All right.
Well, on that note.
Yes. Now, when we come back, wow, one of the NFL owners said something that is so bad, I couldn't believe it. I had to double and triple check it. And then I want to also give you a quick clip from Judah's Netflix special, America's the Greatest Country in the United States, when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. CompuFox writes in, I'll judge people not by the content of their wallets, but how they spend the dough. Very fair. Vance says, knowing Trump voters, they would react to Homo sapien with homophobia. Kind of clever, I like it. Addy says, hoping for the right billionaire to win is the opposite of democracy. Money should not equal speech, period. Hear, hear, brother. Panny B writes, technically referring to Steyer, he can give $27 to just Democrats. That's not a big money donation.
Actually,
if you'd like to, you can give all the way up to $2,700, I believe. I think that's the cap. So justdemocrats.com/win. I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying. Okay. Now, Judah's got a great special coming out on Netflix called America is the Greatest Country in the United States. Here's a little clip from that.
We don't need it. We're Americans. We're strong. When I'm president, I'm going to make college free. But you got to pay for high school. Racism, where do you stand? For or against it? A lot of undecided. I think climate change won the Cold War. Invade North Dakota. Send North Korea a message. Welcome to the number one country. Welcome.
Judah, you know what that is? That's just clever. That's what that is.
Thanks, man. Well, the whole special, it's 84 minutes. It's in black and white. I made it myself. I intentionally did it in a very kind of lo-fi, low-budget documentary style way. And it's filmed over multiple nights, mostly at the Comedy Cellar in New York. And it's thematically, it's mostly deals with, you know, I'm satirizing American exceptionalism. Because I think one of the things that causes a lot of problems in this country, and this comes from the Democrats, it comes from the Republicans, is that America is the greatest country in the history of the planet. That's what both parties say and the mainstream media says. So when you're fed that propaganda from everywhere, it kind of blinds you into thinking that how could there ever be any problems? It can't be our country. It must be this group. Oh, it's the Muslims. It's the Mexicans. It's black people. It's liberals. It's whoever, you know. So and I take on all the big issues of that are all the big human rights issues, you know, from racism, sexism, imperialism.
To brunch. So, I saw brunch in there.
Yeah. Well, I'm against brunch because, and when I'm president, I'm going to ban brunch because I'm against corporate mergers. Breakfast and lunch coming together. It's too much power.
Okay, I know we got to go to the next news story, but I have to tell you real quick my brunch story. I was at brunch in Vegas on Friday or Saturday or something, and this lady apparently has never been to a buffet in Vegas or whatever, and her husband goes and gets the breakfast first, eggs, bacon, stuff, and then he goes and gets some lunch from the buffet, right? And she's like, breakfast and lunch? That's disgusting. What is this?
Oh,
I was
Vegas.
Like that brunch.
First of all, the way
the
you set it up,
country in America.
I went to brunch in Vegas. Is a great just Vegas brunch is a whole other thing. Yes, like, but yeah, that's so she still didn't get it.
No, she didn't. She was like, it was the first time she had been faced with this lunch right after breakfast, and thought it was the craziest thing she'd ever
if
seen.
If she watches my special, she'll probably think it's entirely just saying America is definitely great in every category with no flaws at all.
That's yeah, she's yeah. Yeah, she's got the no irony gene. And wow. Yeah, and look, you know, super last thing on your special. By the way, when does it come out?
On Halloween. Tuesday, October 31st.
Yeah, I got to give you credit. I never quite thought about it that way until you just explained it, Judah. That the American exceptionalism is partly what causes blaming all the other things.
Yeah.
It couldn't be us. It couldn't be us that's the problem. Yeah. So it must be the other, whatever we've decided the other is.
Even if those people are American citizens.
Yeah, because I mean, I find that, you know, as a nation, we're good at looking out the window and blaming other people, other groups within our country or other countries, but we're not good at looking in the mirror. We're not good at looking at saying, oh, maybe we should fix this, you know. It's okay. Yeah. For a country to not be perfect and to have problems. But it's not good if you're not able to actually admit it and then fix it. You know, it's like if you have a drug or alcohol problem, the first step is admitting that there's a problem.
Yeah.
So it's like it's okay.
That's good. That's
it's
good.
Like the way you get better, like if you're on a team, it's like if you're on a sports team, you know, and your quarterback stinks, but nobody ever talks about how the quarterback stinks and you keep starting the same quarterback. It's like, no, let's get that quarterback better or get another quarterback in there.
Or go get Colin Kaepernick. Yeah.
Yes.
Look at
definitely
that transition right there.
Yeah, okay, yeah. To our football story.
Okay. The owner of the Houston Texans is under fire for his commentary or input on the ongoing NFL anthem protest. Now, this is obviously a tense issue. And some of the reactions from people who don't support the protests have been slightly less than sensitive from time to time, up to and including the president. But look at what Bob McNair said. It was at a lengthy ESPN feature chronicling last week's meetings in New York, which of course are about this issue, some including direct input from players. He said he was opposed to the protests and said, "We can't have the inmates running the prison."
Ooh.
And came up with this stat saying that 96% of America is opposed to the protests. Which I would say,
you invented that.
Mm-hmm. And two, I don't care if 96% of the country is opposed to people doing the right thing. That doesn't mean anything at all. The majority of the country has been wrong about a lot of shit through the history of our country. So people had a problem with that because he's referring to them as inmates there. And so they put out a statement. This is that statement. I regret that I used that expression. I never meant to offend anyone, and I was not referring to our players. I used a figure of speech that was never intended to be taken literally. Yeah, we get that. We're still mad. I would never characterize our players or our league that way, and I apologize to anyone who was offended by it.
Who do you mean? He meant like the real inmates. Like, what else do the NFL owners have? They clearly run prisons underneath stadiums. Yes. I think we need, screw Pizzagate, guys. We got a whole new stadium gate going on.
To me, the most telling part of that 96% is how everybody is in their own bubble, and especially billionaire owners of teams are so egocentric oftentimes that that stat of course doesn't apply to the country. There's an enormous percentage of the country that supports Kaepernick, that realizes there is police brutality, unfortunately specifically more so aimed at African Americans, but really the poor and the middle class get it of course way more than the rich do. It's more of a class issue, but also some degree a race issue, and there's a wide variety of opinions. So what does he mean 96%? In his own bubble, which is the NFL owners, it is almost literally 96% of them who are opposed to the protests. Only the owner of the Jaguars is in favor of the protests. So in his world, 96% are opposed to the protests. And why do these prisoners keep protesting? You know, and one of the things that always drove me crazy, and you're going to think it's a small thing, and I hear you, brother, but is those shirts that everybody went around in, not now, like for 10 years, 20 years, I've seen this, and it's always bothered me a little bit. Property of the Indianapolis Colts, property of the Denver Broncos, right? That always like just bothered me a little bit. And that's a very common shirt. I don't think they meant anything bad by it. I'm not trying to nitpick, but now when you see the mentality of the owners and they think, we run this thing, you don't run this thing, and we view you as the prisoners, right? And look, we know that he didn't mean it literally. I hope. and they're not prisoners. They make a lot of money. The players do, right? But at the same time, the owners are now telling them, we will dock your pay. We will suspend you. We will take away your property if you don't have the same opinions as we do. Yeah. If you want to express your opinions as an American citizen, we will punish you. And that kind of, it's not a prison, but it's, you know, but it is punitive.
Even if it's not even on the field during the game. Like, it's not like we produce this product, this sports entertainment, and we're not going to do it. It's not even that. And it still frustrates not just the owners, but a lot of Americans. I don't understand. I think the simplest thing, if they want to stop the protests, you know, I don't think they should. I think the protests should continue, is how about there's no reason whatsoever to play the national anthem in the first place at a goddamn sports event. Just take the thing out. It's really weird and creepy and North Korean-y. I don't understand why we're doing it.
100%. You know, I'm a big, I used to play soccer. I'm a big soccer fan in Europe and other parts of the world. When there is a local game, there is no national anthem played. You know, when Manchester plays London in soccer in England, they're not playing the British national anthem.
No, they just chant with expletives against one another.
And when St. Louis plays Cincinnati, why are you playing the national anthem? If anything, play the St. Louis
such a
anthem.
Jingoism in play sports.
That makes sense to some extent. Yeah.
I just feel like there's a jingoism in sports all around that doesn't need to be there, right? Like there can be. It's the same thing we're asked as Americans to put our heads down and not ask questions and to think that dissent is somehow unpatriotic, that the First Amendment is somehow exercising it is somehow unpatriotic. Right. And the same thing with sports. It's like, well, just shut up and, you know, you play ball. Right. You play ball, you shut up, even though you're the reason I make so much money. Right. You're the reason I'm here. And so to me, this is more of a call to players to be like, oh, really? Maybe we should go on a prison strike if you think this is a prison.
But if you look at it, what this owner said, if you take it, you know, figuratively, he really is saying what is the norm for all jobs throughout the country.
Sure.
I mean, jobs basically aren't a democracy. Mm-hmm. When you work for someone, they really are a dictator. And you really can't, you know, if you see something going wrong within your country and you speak up, chances are you're going to be let go.
And this goes whether it's something that has to do with sexual assault or whatever. And that's why people don't speak up. So this is a big, it's a huge moment. And it's bigger than football, you know.
And it's but it's got such a racial component. I mean, I know, Jake, that like, but it's super racialized. Most NFL owners are white. I think there's maybe one. I know there's like one black owner.
The Jaguar owner is Pakistani.
Okay, there you go. So, you know, I mean, it's super racialized. Inmates to prison guards or to, you know, people who run prisons, and it even harkens back to like slavery, like a little bit of, you know, this like. We own you. And so anyway, there's super overtones of that. So even the fact that he would go to that metaphor just shows, you know, how he views his players.
Yeah, and so the actual quote is, he got it wrong, by the way. The saying is not, we can't have inmates running the prison, it's inmates running the asylum. But his main...
That makes him sound crazy, though.
But his main point is, look, we're in charge here. And to some degree, yeah, of course, the people who own the company are, of course, in charge, right? But it's not a productive way of handling employee relationships, where you say, hey, you guys are the prisoners or the insane people that we've put into this asylum that I run, right? And I'm gonna run it with a heavy hand. And whether they have the right to or not, it doesn't seem like a productive way of doing it, and especially football with the whole, you know, the physical aspect of it and the, you know, it just harkens back to things that you don't want to harken back to. So this is not remotely helpful. And so some will say, well, he said in the privacy of the other owners. I'm not sure that makes it better. There's some chance that makes it worse. Like every day thought, oh, it's all us now. We could be honest with each other. I mean, what are we letting these guys have any voice at all?
Right.
We could pretend later publicly that we give a damn what they say when we in reality don't.
Also, the idea that the word run, we can't let them run. No one's running anything. It is a demonstration of solidarity and sort of minor protest around police brutality. Like, no one's running anything.
It shows you, though, how scared they are.
Yeah.
And it shows you how important protest is. The fact that he's saying this, he's admitting the fear they have.
Yeah.
You know, those are such great points, because I never thought about it that way, Francesca. I mean, what are they running? I mean, if Kaepernick came and said, hey guys, look, I really think the ticket should be $37.50 and your profit margin should be 12.25%, you'd be like, hey, whoa, dude, that's not your job, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. They're not saying we want to run anything. They're just saying, oh, by the way, I don't like it when unarmed black guys get shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, now you're trying to run things and you don't want unarmed blacks to get shot.
And by the way, like,
I didn't know that was part of the NFL's job. To help with police brutality. I mean, because if you say they're running things, I guess it's kind of a mindset of like, no, we're in charge not just of the NFL, but the country. Yeah. And so, no, know your role. Your role is to bow your head, but not your knee, and never complain about anything, even if it doesn't have anything to do with the actual game.
Yeah. Also, I think just having to listen to a song before you play a game is kind of corny.
And you know what? Yeah. And just to end on that, it's a great point. Normally, the anthem is played in international events. So when you're doing World Cup or Olympics, we'll play, if we win the gold, for example, in the Olympics, they'll play the national anthem, which is great, which is terrific, right? So, and by the way, one of the greatest sports protests of all time happened while the anthem was being played in the Olympics in 1968.
Yeah.
And now we celebrate those guys, but now when it's done in live time, oh, how dare they, right? Mm-hmm. But in 2009 they used to have the national anthem played without the players on the field. They used to be in the locker room. In 2009, they changed it when the military started paying the NFL for displays of patriotism. Then they made the players come out for the national anthem. That was not in ancient history. That was in 2009 that they changed the rule. So this is actually paid patriotism, which is gross, and the opposite of earned true patriotism. So it's wrong on every level.
Which goes back to exactly what you said, very North Korea-like, which is what you said earlier.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're way out of time. Nando Vila is coming, Anna Kasparian is coming. Everybody check out Judah Friedlander's special on Netflix. And you all know that America is the greatest country in the United States, but you really need to watch it on Halloween or anytime thereafter on Netflix to really soak it in, okay? So we will be right back.